is not a clash of civilizations.
Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. This is the Bradcast, as heard on 90.7 KPFK in LA, 91.7 KYAQ on the beautiful Oregon Central Coast, 93 FM WLRI in lovely Lancaster, Pennsylvania, 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui. Coast to coast and around the globe on kpfk.org. Streaming on the Progressive Voices channel, on Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, Radio or Not, Radio Free Brooklyn, and of course, Radio Sputnik 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us today for another thrilling action-packed adventure. And it is. It is exactly that, because I don't even know where we're going today. There has been so much going on since the attacks on Friday in Paris, followed by the Democratic debate on Saturday in Iowa. And all of the fallout for all of the above thereafter. We're going to be speaking momentarily with anti-war activist author David Swanson, whose response to the attacks in Paris on Friday, that came just hours after all the news broke and everything went to hell out there. We read his response in full on this program on Monday. So I'm going to talk to him a little bit more about that in detail momentarily. And as an anti-war activist and author, what would he do? What should we do following attacks like those in Paris and all of these other terror attacks? If war is not the answer, what exactly is the answer? We'll talk to David Swanson about that momentarily. That much I know. I also know that later in this program, we will speak with Desi Doyen for our latest Green News Report. Let's say hello to her now. Hi, Desi.
Oh, hey.
How are you?
Didn't see you there.
Yes, I know. the Green News Report ties into all of this. Not only do we cover what little came up concerning climate and energy at that debate on Saturday, that Democratic debate in Des Moines, but also the security issues related to it, related to climate change, global warming, related to the upcoming conference in Paris.
Yep.
In Paris, the UN, what is that exactly?
The UN Climate Conference to bring a global comprehensive climate treaty or agreement, if depends on who you're talking to.
Well, we'll see if there is a treaty or an agreement. They've been working towards this for years, but this would be a treaty for the whole world to curb carbon emissions.
Right.
Correct?
Yes.
If it is carried out, and there were some concerns about that after the attacks on Friday, you've got all of the world leaders going there. President Obama will be there.
Yep. President Putin.
Yep.
Xi Jinping from China. It's going to be a world leader fest.
A world leader fest, indeed. And I've been talking to someone who has been dealing with some of the security issues out there, and they are saying they have never seen security, measures being taken in advance like they are seeing now following the attacks on Friday.
Understandably.
And heading towards this international conference. So we will be talking about that and a big win that we talked a little bit about on this program last week. It got lost a little bit in the Friday shuffle with those terrorist attacks. But the big win for advocates and clean energy champions out in New York, where Andrew Cuomo has vetoed a major natural gas pipeline. So all of that and more is ahead today on the broadcast. But first, we let off yesterday's program, which was our first since the attacks in Paris, with a piece from our friend David Swanson titled "Non-French War Deaths Matter." He wrote, and this is, I'll just give you a couple of paragraphs here to remind you. He wrote, "We are all France, apparently, though we are never all Lebanon or Syria or Iraq for some reason, or a long list of additional places. We are led to believe that U.S. wars are not tolerated and cheered because of the color or culture of the people being bombed and occupied, but let a relatively tiny number of people be murdered in a white Christian Western European land with a pro-war government, and suddenly, sympathy is the order of the day. Well, sympathy damn well ought to be the order of the day following a horrific mass killing in France," writes Swanson. "I just think the same should apply to everywhere else on Earth. The majority of deaths in all recent wars are civilian. The majority of civilians are not hard to sympathize with once superficial barriers are overcome. Yet, the U.S. media never seems to declare deaths in Yemen or Pakistan or Palestine to be attacks on our common humanity." And indeed, writing over in Salon the day after, that was David Swanson's piece, which he wrote in the hours after the massacre on Friday night. And then the next day, writing over at Salon, Ben Norton underscored some of the points I think that David Swanson was making. He writes, for example, that there are hundreds of terrorist attacks in Europe every year. The ones that immediately fill the headlines of every news outlet, however, are the ones carried out by Muslims, not the ones carried out by ethno-nationalists or far-right extremists, which happen to be much, much more frequent. Yet, it is not just right-wing pundits and the media that give much more attention to attacks like those in Paris. Heads of state frequently do so as well. Minutes after the Paris attacks, President Hollande, France, and President Obama addressed the world publicly lamenting the tragedy. Secretary John Kerry condemned them as heinous, evil, vile acts. But notable was the official silence surrounding another horrific terrorist attack that took place only the day before the Paris attacks. Two ISIS suicide bombers killed at least 43 people and wounded more than 230 in attacks on a heavily Shia Muslim community in Beirut on November 12. That was the worst attack in Beirut in years. President Obama did not address the world. He did not condemn the bombings. Nor did the White House interrupt every news broadcast to publicly condemn ISIS, the ISIS massacre in Turkey in October that left 128 people dead, 500 injured at a peaceful rally for a pro-Kurdish political party. More strikingly were the heads of state when the Western-backed Saudi-led coalition bombed a Yemeni wedding on September 28, killing 131 civilians, including 80 women. That massacre did not go viral, and Obama and Hollande did not apologize, yet alone barely even acknowledge the tragedy. Do French lives matter more than Lebanese, Turkish, Kurdish, and Yemeni ones? Asked Ben Norton at Salon. Were these not, too, also heinous, evil, vile acts? Well, it seems that David Swanson touched a chord in his original piece, and others have followed up with some of those same questions as well. Here to discuss all of this and where we go from here is David Swanson, author, activist, journalist, and radio host. He's the director of worldbeyondwar.org and the campaign coordinator for rootsaction.org. His books include War is a Lie. He blogs at davidswanson.org and warisacrime.org. He hosts Talk Nation Radio, and he has been a guest many times over the years on the broadcast. In fact, we've referred to him thanks to his work as a peace activist and author. I should say an anti-war activist and author. We've referred to him as the conscience of the broadcast every now and again. It's always good to talk to him on days like this. David Swanson, welcome back, sir, to the broadcast.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me, and thanks for reading my column and making it sound better than it than the original with your nice radio voice there, Brad.
Well, I don't know if I did that. There was plenty to work with, and as usual, you know, you had the take that really caught my eye, that caught my interest. Really, just hours after news broke out of Paris. What kind of response have you received from that piece? Non-French war deaths matter.
Well, you know, before I wrote that article, I tweeted a tweet, which was essentially the first sentence of that article, which you've read. Mm-hmm. We are all France, apparently, though we are never all Lebanon or Syria or Iraq for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
End of tweet. And usually my tweets get 3 or 4 retweets. You know, this one is over 12,000 at this point.
Wow.
So it looked to me like there was some interest. And, of course, that interest is driven largely by the media-fueled sympathy with the horror and the suffering in France, which is entirely appropriate and desirable, but needs to be built on. But also, people retweeting that message, and you can tell from the comments that they add to it, there was this disgust with the politically driven selective nature of where the mass media tells us to direct our sympathies. You know, these are people like that columnist you were reading, Norton, and dozens of others that have given me some encouragement for our little species here, because they share my desire to have that sympathy broadened to all victims of organized violence, not just those in a politically friendly government to the government in Washington and a white Christian European population and so forth. I actually think we're in a better place, at least in the United States, and I think probably in much of Europe, than we were on September 11th, 2001, in terms of being able to say, wait a minute, don't do it, don't make it worse, don't fall into the trap, don't do what the what these criminals want you to do.
Well, this is an odd moment where you, David Swanson, are more optimistic than I am. I'm not quite so sure. I'm not quite so optimistic that we are in a much better place. And a little bit later in today's program, we're going to talk about some of the reaction that's going on in this country to those attacks in Paris, some of the appalling reactions. But picking up on your point, David Graham over at The Atlantic, he described, I think, the difference in coverage between what we're seeing now following Paris versus some of these other attacks as the empathy gap between Paris and Beirut, that attack that took place just the day before Paris. He said, there is also a troubling tribal or racial component to this familiarity factor as well. People tend to perk up when they see themselves in the victims, noting how Western media largely ignored those ISIS attacks in the days prior to Paris with those bombings in Beirut and in Ankara, Turkey, that similarly killed and wounded hundreds. How do you explain, David Swanson, that empathy gap? Is there really a difference in the empathy that we have for those of our own tribe, or is this, or does this have to do with more to do with the way the media present it to us? In other words, if they covered Beirut and Turkey with the same wall-to-wall, round-the-clock coverage and the drumbeat of war, would we care more? Would the American public care more?
Well, it's 100% cultural, and it's a big chunk immediate mass media coverage. You know, it's not entirely. There are built-in tendencies in our culture to extend our sympathies only so far and to stop at certain superficial barriers. But this is dramatically encouraged by the mass media, from the New York Times through the television and radio networks. People are encouraged to develop this sympathy and empathy and desire to assist and help that is so admirable and absolutely to be encouraged when it comes to something like France. But France now, not France in 2003 when France was the devil, because it wouldn't support an obvious looming disaster in terms of the invasion of Iraq. So there has to be this incredible short memory. Things have to be effectively erased from memory very rapidly in order to pick and choose where the sympathies are supposed to go and where the demonization is supposed to go when a dictator shifts from being an ally to a target and so forth. But there is an opportunity here, I think, and this is whether it's being optimistic or not. I think we have to try to grab every opportunity and use it for what it's worth. And when people are feeling sympathy for victims of violence and victims of a war that has spread ever so slightly from a distant country to one of the countries that, in fact, is engaged in that war, we have to try to expand that. We have to try to say, yes, we're all France, but we're also all Lebanon, and we're all everywhere else. And the responses I've gotten to my article and to my tweet and social media have been, you know, 99% entirely positive. And most of the negative ones have been, you know, furious anger that I failed to name some particular country. You know, why did you leave this country out of the list when I explicitly said the whole earth, you know, which doesn't do it. But I think that's good that people want to make sure that sympathy is extended to various places.
I'm speaking with David Swanson, author and activist, anti-war author, anti-war activist. And I want to talk about where we go from here and, you know, where France has gone, where we go, and how you, as an anti-war author and activist, think we should move forward. But I want to hit one more point on the media. I have this concern. I'd love to get your thoughts on it. I have this concern. You know, since ISIS has come around, I try to not, frankly, cover them, mention them, show them, show their swell black and white pirate flag. You know, I see a danger in the way that they are covered, the way that these events are covered. I feel like in some way we're making the same mistakes that we have made for years in, you know, kind of making outlaw legends out of these mass shooters, right, in our country, where we, you know, put their faces on Time and Newsweek and, you know, these guys in Aurora, Colorado and Columbine and so forth. I feel like the more that our media waves that scary ISIS pirate flag, I think the more and more attractive, perversely enough, that group becomes. Do we give them too much attention in our media and actually in our politics as well?
I think you're absolutely right, and it's a critical point, and it's a difficult one to resolve because you can't pretend it doesn't exist and not talk about it. But what they want is fame. What they want is to be targeted as the prime enemy of the foreign imperialists, and what they want is the bombing. And this is what the U.S. government is giving them, and France is giving them, and the media is giving them. And I think, you know, one alternative is to compare them to other threats that are more real but less glamorous. You know, the police officers in the United States are far more likely to kill you than a Muslim terrorist or a Syrian refugee. Mm-hmm. McDonald's is far more likely to kill you. Health insurance companies, environmental polluters are far more likely to kill you. Climate change is going to render the entire caliphate over there uninhabitable this century unless we radically change our behavior. So I think, you know, there were all those appalling reactions that you mentioned. I assume you're referring to such things as denying Syrian refugees entry into a state, if that can be done. There were all of those things after 9/11 as well, but more so, with less opposition in the other direction. You know, Barbara Lee was the only Congress member that didn't want to launch a war. Now there are quite a few, to take one measure of it. Congress members, of course, lagging far behind the public now, as always.
But we also had Republicans back then saying that, you know, Islam is peace. You had George Bush saying, you know, this is not about Muslims. This is about these outlaws, these criminals. And now you've got an entire, you know, major political party, it seems, that is simply saying, no, blame all the Muslims. And I think that's a very dangerous place to be. But, you know, I think that's all just made worse. I feel like the media fans the flames, but I don't know the answer. And it sounds like neither do you necessarily, in that we have to cover
obviously, these events, but where is that line between, appropriate coverage of the news and, making folk heroes out of the bad guys? And then, of course, we certainly make heroes out of them in some regard when we start bombing them. As you point out, that's exactly what they'd like us to do. France unleashed a massive bombing campaign, we are told, purportedly against ISIS targets in Raqqa over the Raqqa, Syria over the weekend. I don't know if you can help me out here or not. I don't understand. You know, we have been carrying out these quote-unquote massive bombing campaigns against ISIS and Al-Qaeda and all manner of targets in that region now for more than 10 years, and it seems like the enemy is growing, not shrinking. Isn't it the definition of insanity, they say, to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result?
I think it is, and I told Russia this on Russian TV earlier today. Stop imitating the United States. Wake up. I've been saying this to France. You know, these nations need to stop repeating this mistake of creating blowback and then using that as a justification to escalate the violence that created the blowback in the first place. They all announce that there's no military solution. President Obama said it over and over and over again every time that he escalates the attempt to find a military solution. Raqqa is a city inhabited by human beings, and ISIS is a fleeting target, leaving misleading clues to the brilliant Western so-called intelligence services. But who dies in these massive airstrikes, as they call them, is inevitably civilians, primarily civilians, who deserve our sympathy absolutely as much as French civilians, but don't get it, because we aren't told, for one thing, and we're led to believe that, military-aged males were the victims and so forth of almost every strike. This is entirely counterproductive. None of this would exist without the 2003 invasion of Iraq and going back to the funding and arming of these militants in Afghanistan decades earlier. This has got to stop, or you're going to have this problem worsening and worsening. And so the fact that that people are sitting down and talking perhaps about even not insisting upon the overthrow of Assad is very encouraging and has to be where the focus goes. But it can't be, let's come to a new agreement and allow Assad to stay in order to all join forces and bomb ISIS more, which sort of misses the point, that it's counterproductive on its own terms. And even if the United States and Russia and all parties come to an alliance, they're not going to affect the result that they imagine.
Well, it seems like that is where we're going with another coalition, all of these countries getting together for even more bombing, even more shock, more awe. So, David Swanson, if not that, because I know that, from the perspective of someone who opposes war under, I think, pretty much all circumstances, if not war, if not bombing, with this direct threat, with ISIS trying to get at, all not just Western countries, as we've discussed, but all sorts of countries, what do we do? What do we do tomorrow, President Swanson, in order to deal with this?
Yeah, luckily I'm not president. Go to rootsaction.org and sign the petition there if you agree with it. Contact elected officials and organizations and peace activists and other groups and get involved in pushing for peace and justice and sanity this time rather than war and escalation. Demand that the U.S. government stop supporting anything that Saudi Arabia and Turkey and other allies do, even though they're making the problem worse. Cut off the funding and the arms flow to ISIS from Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states and from the United States directly and indirectly. Stop arming the so-called moderates who pass the arms off. Stop arming the Iraqi government that surrenders the arms. Cut off the funding and the supply for ISIS. End the air campaigns. Stop dropping the bombs that are the biggest recruitment tool ISIS has had. and announce a completely different approach to the world, including military withdrawal from the Middle East, massive reparations for the damage in Iraq and Libya and Afghanistan, including green energy, which this region needs more than any other on Earth, insist on an arms embargo. You know, 80% of the arms shipped into the Middle East are U.S. to begin with. So you announce an arms embargo, the United States alone, you've got 80% success. But get agreement that you're going to have a weapons of mass destruction free Middle East that's going to include Israelis' nuclear weapons and everyone else's nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. Stop the construction of nuclear energy all over that region and push green energy instead. And stop pouring gasoline on the fire.
You know, you say stop shipping weapons and armaments into the area. It kind of reminds me of, you know, when we talk about gun safety measures here and how we should stop selling this type of gun or that type of gun. Meanwhile, we've got so many guns in this country. If we stop selling all guns right now, you know, I think this U.S. would remain the wild, wild west for decades to come just with the amount of arms that are already here. I feel the same is true with the Middle East, and that even if we stopped shipping over arms, even if we stop supporting Saudi Arabia, who, you know, is pouring so much support for these guys, for these terrorists into the rest of the region, that there would still be this violence. And what you're saying, David Swanson, is we need to get out. We need to get out entirely. So, okay, if that means the entire region collapses into war, including Israel and including, you know, pretty much everyone over there, that's the way we should go. We should get out. We should wipe our hands of it and just let this mess eventually settle itself out.
Yeah, by saying that the United States should stop making it worse and start making it better, and that includes pulling the U.S. military out of places where the U.S. military is making things worse, doesn't mean abandon the region and let everyone die. It's actually a sincere attempt to make things better. If the United States were to make gun sales illegal, the price of guns would skyrocket, just as it did in Australia when they did this, to the point where most people would not have a gun to come rob your house, because the gun would be worth more than anything they could get out of your house. Mass violence in terms of war and support for groups like ISIS is very different, I think, from that sort of individual gun crime in this country. It requires mass support for the agenda. And if you stop propping up dictators and you stop arming them and you stop supporting brutal governments and brutal lives that lead to desperation and support for these groups, then you have a chance of stemming the tide of recruitment into groups like ISIS. People don't join. You look at the Nation magazine's report by this journalist who went and talked with all of these ISIS members. They don't join primarily because of a certain religion. They join because they hate the United States for what it's done to their region. They say exactly what the U.S. government doesn't want you to know they say, that this is blowback. And so stop making it worse and start making it better. Start giving these people a chance at a decent life with reparations, economic and agricultural and energy and structural, that would actually cost much less than what is being spent on the militarization of that part of the globe.
David, I've got just a minute left, and you've outlined a lot of things that we should stop doing. What, other than stopping doing things, what should, is there anything proactive as far as, do you support police actions, special forces raids, that sort of thing, to target potential enemies, imminent attacks, and so forth, as opposed to, you know, bombing campaigns and boots on the ground, long wars and so forth? Do countries in that region have the right to defend themselves, against threats? Or is it all hands off as you see it, and then try to figure out a new paradigm
of peace.
Yeah, well, if police action is a euphemism for something like killing millions of North Koreans, then of course I don't support it. But if it means action by police in a restrained and wise and strategic manner intended to uphold a nonviolent civilization, then yes, absolutely, there's a role for it. There's also a role for peace workers and human shields. There's also a role for journalists and aid workers, but it's very difficult to put these people into utter chaos, and you've got to do this in stages. You're not going to go from the disaster that several Middle Eastern nations are today to a peaceful paradise in a week, but you could do it in a year or two if you did everything right. And it has to start with ceasing to make things worse. And then the steps that would actually make it better certainly ought to include criminal justice of whatever form and through whatever sort of truth and reconciliation process. But people, including top leaders of Western nations who have as much at fault as locals in some cases, mm-hmm. Be brought to justice for what's been done over the past number of years.
David Swanson, author, activist, journalist, campaign coordinator at RootsAction.org, where their latest petition titled "Insist Paris Tragedy Not Be Exploited for More War" has already gained over 25,000 signatures in just the day or two that it has been up. I'd encourage you to go over there and check that out as well. Check out David's personal work at davidswanson.org and warisacrime.org. His book, War is a Lie, will be second edition. War is a Lie, second edition, will be published in April of this year. Congratulations on that, David, and on all the success of all of the important work you're doing. He can also be heard on Talk Nation Radio, and he should be followed on the Twitters at DavidCNSwanson. David, always great to talk to you, my friend. Thank you for being the conscience of the broadcast.
You too. Thanks, Brad.
Yeah, all right. We'll do it again soon. A quick break, and we are back with more broadcast right after this. Please stay tuned.
One, two, three, four. Everybody talking about bagging, 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 bagging,
bagging, bagging, bagging, bagging, bagging, back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with you here, trying to make sense of it all, as the theme song goes. There is a lot to make sense of here, and I suspect we will be doing so in the next few days as the world continues to react to what happened in Paris, France on Friday. That's, of course, as we discussed in the last segment with David Swanson there, as they react to what happened in Paris, France, but they seem to not notice what happened everywhere else in the world. What happened in Beirut just the day before, what happened in Turkey just a few days prior to that, and frankly, what has been happening across the Middle East for well over a decade at this point, in no small part thanks to us, thanks to what we did, thanks to us lighting that fuse. Certainly in 2003 when we invaded Iraq, if not long before that with our policies in the Middle East. So there is a lot to make sense of here, and I will do my best. I'd love your thoughts, of course, as well on all of this as we move forward. You can follow me on the Twitters at TheBradBlog as well over at over on Facebook at TheBradBlog, or drop us email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. And I know we've got a whole lot that's sitting here in front of me that I want to get to. I'm never going to get to all of it because we got to get to the green news in a few minutes, at least not all of it today. So the story will continue. But from Ben Norton's piece that I was citing while I was speaking with David Swanson there, that's a lot in this piece, Ben Norton's piece at Salon. A lot of really good stuff. And I've only just read a bit of it, but and we'll probably go back to it more this week. But in regard to what David was saying about, you know, bombing, how's that going to work out? How's it going to work out just doing more bombing, more intensive bombing? I mean, this happens every time. I remember, I think it was, I want to say Lebanon, where one of their pilots, fighter pilots, was shot down earlier this year. Or, you know, the instance where they burned him alive. I can't remember if that's what it was, but as I recall, the country of Lebanon then went on, said, we will, you know, spare no cost, and we will attack the people who did this. And they went on a bombing campaign. And how'd that work out? Did that slow things down? Did that stop? Maybe we need to try something else, something. And I don't know. David Swanson listed off a lot of things. But Ben Norton writes something similar. He says, near the end of his piece, he says, the hegemonic, quote, solution is always more militarization, both abroad and here at home. Yet it is, in fact, militarization that is the cause of the problem in the first place. At the time of the atrocious 9/11 attacks, Al-Qaeda was a relatively small and isolated group. It was the U.S.-led war in and occupation of Iraq that created the conditions of extreme violence, desperation, and sectarianism in which Al-Qaeda metastasized, spreading worldwide. The West, in its addiction to militarism, played into the hands of the extremists. And today, we see the rotten fruit born of that rotten addiction. ISIS is the Frankenstein's monster of Western imperialism, writes Ben Norton. He concludes by saying the Paris attacks, as horrific as they are, could be a moment to think critically about what our governments are doing, both abroad and here at home. If we do not think critically, if we act capriciously and violently, the wounds will only continue to fester. The bloodletting will ultimately accelerate. In short, he writes, those who promote militarist policies and anti-Muslim and anti-refugee bigotries in response to the Paris attacks are only going to further propagate violence and hatred. If the political cycle is not changed, the cycle of violence will continue. And boy, can we guarantee that will happen, that it will continue, that the political cycle will most likely not be changed. It would be lovely to see tens of millions of people going over to rootsaction.org and signing that petition to say no more militarism in response to the Paris attacks. That would be wonderful. But I doubt that will happen. Instead, what we are hearing, and we're going to continue to hear over the next year, because this is a presidential election year, is we're going to hear more of the drumbeat. You know, we've got to wipe the bastards out. We've got to do more bombing. Nuke 'em. It's a battle of civilizations. Civilization itself is at risk here. This is our generation's world war. This is World War III. Here was Marco Rubio singing that familiar song as part of his presidential campaign yesterday.
The attacks in Paris are a wake-up call to the fact that what we're involved in now is a civilizational conflict with radical Islam. This is not a geopolitical issue where they want to conquer territory and it's two countries fighting against each other. They literally want to overthrow our society and replace it with their radical Sunni Islamic view of the future. This is not a grievance-based conflict. This is a clash of civilizations. For they do not hate us because we have military assets in the Middle East. They hate us because of our values.
Okay. All right.
They hate us.
Now, they hate us because of our values. They don't hate us because we have military assets in the Middle East. They don't hate us because we are constantly bombing their country. We are constantly killing them, and not just them, not just the people who are engaging in this war, but their families, their children, their wives, their mothers. We read, I think it was last week before all of this happened, these admissions from the CIA director, I think it was George Tenet, was it, who said, yeah, we knew that we were probably going to kill. We had a target. We knew that the target was there, and we were going to target him with a drone from the skies, and there was a concern that, oh, his wife and children were in the same house with him, and we went and took the shot anyway. We killed the wife, we killed the children, because we had to get this guy, because he was so bad. Now, I wish that was the exception to the rule. That's not the exception to the rule. We do that all the time. And we stand by while our allies do that all the time. The attacks in Saudi Arabia, that Saudi Arabia has been leading in Yemen, has killed, you know, they just attacked a wedding party. Where's the numbers that I have on this? I don't know if I read this earlier or not, but Western-backed Saudi-led coalition bombed a Yemeni wedding on September 28, killing 131 civilians. If you're keeping score at home, that's a higher death rate than ISIS killed in Paris last Friday. This was by our allies. This was a wedding party. 131 civilians. That included 80 women. You may not have even heard about that. Our media did not go wall to wall. MSNBC did not have a terror in Yemen, terror from the skies graphic with spooky, haunting music behind it. It just happened. It happened. It happens all the time. The illegal U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, writes Ben Norton in Ceylon, led to the deaths of at least 1 million people, destabilized the entire region, created extreme conditions in which militant groups like Al-Qaeda spread like wildfire, and eventually leading to the emergence of ISIS. That was Iraq. In Afghanistan, the ongoing U.S.-led war and occupation, which the Obama administration just prolonged for a second time, has led to approximately 250,000 deaths and has displaced millions of Afghans. The disastrous U.S.-led NATO intervention in Libya destroyed the government, turning the country into a hotbed for extremism and allowing militant groups like ISIS to spread west into North Africa. Thousands of Libyans have been killed and hundreds of thousands have been made refugees. In Yemen, as I just noted, the U.S. and other Western nations are arming and backing the Saudi-led coalition that is raining down bombs, including banned cluster munitions on civilian areas, pulverizing the poorest country in the Middle East. And once again, the story should now be familiar. Thousands have been killed and hundreds of thousands have been displaced, writes Ben Norton. But other than that, Senator Rubio, they don't hate us for our military assets in the region. They hate us for our freedoms. Really? Yes, it's a clash of civilizations. This is our great war. We have to stand up for our right to bomb the crap out of them and kill their civilians for decades on end. That's what we have to do. That's what our generation must stand up and do. And by the way, when that effort leads to a flood of millions of refugees, oh, you can't come in here. Don't come in here. You're not welcome here. We don't want you here. You might be terrorists. Go to hell. For what it's worth, John Kerry sort of responded, I don't know if this was on purpose or not, to Marco Rubio's claim that this is a clash of civilization. He was in Paris, I think, John Kerry. He, for his part, at least in his statement, does not believe this is a clash of civilizations.
Don't mistake what these attacks represent. This is not a clash of civilizations. These terrorists have declared war against all civilization. They kill Yazidis because they are Yazidis. They kill Christians because they are Christians. They kill Shia because they are Shia. They are, in fact, psychopathic monsters. And there is nothing nothing civilized about them.
So, yeah, it's not a clash of civilizations. It's a war on civilization itself, as John Kerry sees it, if you can understand that nuance. I'm not sure that I can, and I'm not sure that anyone in our media at home here can remember it. Now, you would expect, and we won't have time to get to this today, maybe tomorrow, you would expect, of course, Fox News and their drumbeats to continue. Call for war, more war. But it was actually CNN, and we don't have time to, we'll try to devote the full day to this tomorrow, barring any more news and surprises. But it was CNN. CNN had a couple of anchors in the hours after the attacks on Friday, and they had a guy, a Frenchman who was Muslim, who happens to lead, I think, the Council Against Islamophobia. And we'll play the longer part tomorrow. But here was at the end, after he had left this. What's his name, Desi?
His name is Yasser Louadi, and he is a member of the Collective Against Islamophobia in France.
Right. And he was asking, where is the Muslim community? Where is their responsibility in all of this? And he answered, he said, no, this is not about the Muslim community. We are French. We are Frenchmen. You know, these people are not a part of our community. They left. They went away. They got foreign trained, and then they came back. You know, we stand with the French.
And because we are French.
Because we are French. And yet these two anchors, these two CNN anchors, were like, I don't know. I don't hear anybody declaring responsibility. Just play the end of that after he left. Here's what they had to say behind his back.
Yes, Louati there, spokesman for the Collective Against Islamophobia in France. You know, I'm yet to hear, you know, the condemnation from the Muslim community on this, but
I mean,
we'll wait
you
and
know,
see.
Again, the point he's making is it's not our fault, but the fact of the matter is when these things happen, the finger of blame is pointed at the Muslim community, and so you have to be preemptive. It's coming from the community. You've got to stand in.
The word responsibility comes to mind.
It just comes to mind. You can't shirk that.
Yeah, you can't shirk it. It just comes to mind. Just the way all white people were asked to apologize after that jerk walked into the church in South Carolina a few months back and shot up everybody. Desi Doyen, are you willing to apologize? Are you willing to take responsibility for what your fellow white people did?
Only for white. That he was a white man, so as a white female, no, I don't have to take responsibility
okay.
for that.
Okay, well, you were raised Christian, weren't you?
Yes.
Okay, well, that guy was Christian, as I understand it. Are you willing to take responsibility for all Christians after what he did in that church in
Absolutely
South Carolina?
Absolutely not. But I do condemn it.
Muslims around the world also condemned the Paris attacks. Muslim leaders the world over are condemning the horrific terror attacks that struck Paris Friday night, expressing outrage and shock at the onslaught of shootings and bombings that left 120 dead and hundreds wounded. This is over at Think Progress. They list one group after another in Ireland, in Great Britain, in Indonesia, in America, all of whom are forced, unlike every other group in the world, unlike every other ethnic or religious group, when something like this happens, they are being forced to condemn, issue their condemnation. You know who else, where else you could have found that information other than Think Progress, since CNN had yet to hear any Muslims, you know, take responsibility for this, condemn these attacks? Oh, here's an article. It's called hashtag not in my name. Muslims condemn attacks in Paris. By Savannah Pratt of CNN. Idiots. Quick break and we're back with our Green News Report. This story, I suspect, will continue, as much as I hate to say it, in any event. Quick break, and we're back with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report. Stay tuned. We will stop nothing. We will sally forth. We will move forward bravely in the face of whatever is going on in Paris. Well, we will talk about that momentarily here in Don't even start me on the Islamophobia. Well, that's tomorrow. Okay, let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
All of us believe climate change is real.
Climate and energy get short shrift in the second Democratic presidential debate.
In the previous debate, you said the greatest threat to national security was climate change. Do you still believe that?
Yes, U.S. media. Climate change remains a national security risk. International climate talks will go forward despite Paris terror attacks. Plus,
the reward was not worth the risk.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo vetoes major natural gas facility.
All of that natural gas and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
They said the rising sea levels would put parts of Florida underwater. We said only parts.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, a source of mine who works with the military in Europe, says that they have never seen such high security in place as they're seeing now in Paris in advance of the UN climate talks. They say that even contractors are being highly vetted like never before.
Yes, intensified security measures are now in place in Paris in advance of the International Climate Treaty Conference. UN officials and French government officials announced that the conference will go forward as scheduled in 2 weeks, but marches, concerts, rallies, and other outside events are likely to be canceled. More than 150 world leaders will attend the opening of the conference, including President Barack Obama and the leaders of Russia, China, India, and the European Union. The two-week conference is focused on completing a new comprehensive international agreement for all nations to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions that cause dangerous climate change. Meanwhile, at the second 2016 Democratic presidential debate hosted by CBS News on a Saturday night in Des Moines, Iowa, moderators chose to ask no direct questions about climate change or energy policy, despite the importance of both, except for one mention. John Dickerson of Face the Nation did offer Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders a chance to do over his previous remarks linking climate change to national security and terrorism.
In the previous debate, you said the greatest threat to national security was climate change. Do you still believe that?
Absolutely. In fact, climate change is directly related to the growth of terrorism. And if we do not get our act together and listen to what the scientists say, you're going to see countries all over the world. This is what the CIA says. They're going to be struggling over limited amounts of water, limited amounts of land to grow their crops, and you're going to see all kinds of international conflict.
On Sunday's Face the Nation, Dickerson then asked Sanders to explain further how drought in Syria gave rise to terrorist organizations like ISIS.
When you have drought, when people can't grow their crops, they're going to migrate into cities. And when people migrate into cities and they don't have jobs, there's going to be a lot more instability, a lot more unemployment. So where you have discontent, where you have instability, that's where problems arise. And certainly, without a doubt, climate change will lead to that.
We have been covering this issue for well over a year at this point, since the rise of ISIS. The fact that so many in the media and the public, and certainly in the Republican Party, don't understand the connection is, frankly, a national shame.
In fact, over a decade of CIA and Defense Department research finds that climate change impacts are a threat multiplier that aggravates unrest in volatile regions in ways that help fuel terrorism. So, to wrap up this Democratic debate, CBS did not ask any questions about energy policy or about the United Nations International Climate Agreement, which the next president will carry out. All three of the Democratic candidates have significant specific policies for energy and climate change, but you wouldn't know that if you watched any of the debates so far. Finally, buried by the news of the Paris attacks, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo on Friday vetoed a major proposed liquefied natural gas port facility in Long Island Sound in favor of an offshore wind farm proposed for the same location. But he also cited security concerns.
We have terrorist groups that are springing up more and more who look for targets of opportunity where there's a potential to do a significant amount of damage.
Cuomo also pointed to the billions of dollars in damage to New York's infrastructure that was caused by Superstorm Sandy to conclude that the project was not worth the risk.
By the way, I don't believe that that is the last time we're going to deal with something like that. Climate change is real. Extreme weather is real.
This is actually a very big deal. We've seen just within the past 2 weeks, the president turning down the Keystone XL pipeline from Canada. Now Governor Cuomo turning down this natural gas pipeline in New York. We may be turning a page when it comes to fossil fuels in this country. These are big stories. Pay attention. For much more on all of the stories we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
There I go, turn the page.
Oh, I hope we are turning a page, Desi Doyen.
I know.
We will see.
Based on what David Swanson said, you know, some of his ideas for what we do instead and what we do now, that's kind of along the same lines. Stepping away from one thing, fossil fuels, and moving to the other thing.
This all goes together, and we're going to hear, a lot of the wing nuts. Well, what do you mean climate change is the greatest threat? Didn't you see what happened in Paris? Well, let me just, on that point, before we got to get out, via our friend Peter Sinclair over at climatecrocs.com. He said, he pointed out that the terrorist attacks in November 2015 in Paris, 129 fatalities. In August of 2003, the European heat wave there, 70,000 fatalities, a sizable fraction of which he notes were in Paris. So 129 fatalities, horrible indeed. But climate change in August of 2003 in Europe alone, 70,000 fatalities. So laugh all you want when you say climate change is the greatest threat this planet faces. I think Bernie Sanders has the facts to back it up. Anyway, this story, all of these stories will continue, I'm sorry to say. My thanks to Desi Doyen, our producer, to our booking goddess, Cynthia Cohn, and, of course, to David Swanson of warisacrime.org and rootsaction.org. We'll be back with you same Brad time, same Brad channel tomorrow. Until then, drop me email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. You can also find me on the Twitters at TheBradBlog. And if you missed any portion of this program or any other, you can always download it at bradblog.com and over at iTunes, where, yes, please do give us a good review. Make it a little bit easier for everyone else to find our program. All right, that's it. I'm out of here. Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.